You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC. If you missed your favorite program, don't worry. You can listen to podcasts of our program at cjsf.ca.
Does it, like Steve Seattle said, in part, said it to the President of the United States. Tribe follows tribe and nation follows nation. It's like the waves of the sea. It's the order of nature. And regret is useless. Your time of decay may be distant, but it will surely come. For even the white man's God, who walked and talked with him as friend with friend, could not escape our common destiny. We may be brothers after all. We shall see.
That's Russell Means, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamian. This special edition of AR features Russell Means, Knowing Who You Are, Lessons from Native America. For years, the indigenous peoples of the United States, after having been dispersed and decimated and relegated to reservations, were reduced to caricatures. We all knew Indians and their culture. There was the familiar medicine man, the trading post, Geronimo and Crazy Horse, papooses and squaws, teepees and tomahawks, war dances and war parties. Tonto was the epitome of faithfulness and subservience. The formation and rise of the American Indian Movement, AIM, in the late 1960s and early 1970s did much to break down conventional stereotypes. AIM, through its actions at Wounded Knee, Alcatraz, Mount Rushmore, and the Bureau of Indian Affairs, demonstrated that Native Americans could and would fight back against racism and oppression. Russell Means, an Oglala Lakota and a prominent voice in the struggle for indigenous rights, was the first national director of the American Indian Movement. Under his leadership, the organization undertook protests and actions that attracted national and international attention. He passed away in South Dakota on October 22, 2012. This classic from the AR archives was recorded in Boulder, Colorado in 1993. And now, Russell Means.
Amitakwepi, Miyomalakota. Emajantaha wakin zitiospai kile chesapa kin lila wakan. Hello, my relatives. I am an ally from Yellow Thunder Village in the sacred Black Hills. I want you to know just a glimpse of what it's like to be an Indian in this country. Out of sight, out of mind. But in taking that glimpse and acknowledging that fact, you still don't know who we are. And in order for us to be accepted into the human race, we have to have a glimpse of who we are, what we're all about, and why, as this Korean woman who had lived over here for 12 years, or 8 years at the time I knew, and she was marrying a friend of mine, a Spanish friend of mine in New York City, and we were at a party and there was an international guest list, and she came up to me and she says, why is it that everybody that comes to this country wants to be just like the Americans, and you, who were here first, you don't want to be like the Americans? I said, that's a very astute observation. There is a reason. But I'm not going to tell you at this party. But I'll give you all a glimpse
of my heritage and what my children are going to be all about. A long time ago, this is what my grandpa John Feather told me when I was about 5, 6 years old. The summer before I started the first grade, he used to take me on walks down Greenwood, South Dakota. Tell me a lot of things. And we'd always end up down at the store, the only store in Greenwood. And he'd buy me a strawberry pop and a bag of chips. I loved those walks with my grandpa. He'd talk to me, tell me stories. Most of his stories didn't have an ending. He'd tell me a story and no ending. Tell me action stories, love stories, building stories, all kinds of stories. Didn't have an ending. And I'd get frustrated and sometimes mad and impatient. Well, did it happen this way? Wouldn't say nothing. Did it happen that way? Wouldn't say anything. Sometimes he'd say, well, you figure it out. He never told me the endings to those stories. What I did realize later, was that he was really teaching me to analyze, to fire my own imagination, to come to conclusions of my own independently. Logic. He also told me stories about the people, the Lakota. Well, he said Dakota, because he come from that part of my nation that speaks with a D. He told me this story. A long time ago, the people were sitting around the fire, and the men begin to watch the women grow with child. And pretty soon they witnessed the miracle of birth, of life itself being brought forth from the woman into this world. And then as they continued to watch, they saw the woman grab that newborn life and take it to her breast and nurture it. And they saw that child begin to grow big and strong. That was the end of his story. Again, you have to think about that and what it means. And it wasn't until I joined the American Indian Movement that story resurfaced from the back of my brain. And I got to think about it. And I thought about what it really means. And then as I continued to learn and relearn what I've been taught and what my people possess, I came to find out and understand the female-male balance in the universe and the female-male balance in all of life and how we constructed our civilizations, our societies, how indigenous people the world over have constructed their societies based upon the female-male balance. All indigenous societies, even Europe had it at one time. Before the advent of Catholicism. And the female-male balance that is in all of life is in my people. And we acknowledge that the woman is naturally in rhythm with the universe. Think of this. It gives me goosebumps right now. In rhythm with the universe naturally. And with the moon is purified every 29th day on the full moon. Yeah. Is purified naturally by the universe. Now it's well known that in small communities, the women always have their time of purification at the same time. And it's always with the full moon. And it's at that time in respect for what the universe is, and in respect for the female-male balance, they would take leave of their communities during their time of purification. And I come to realize they kick back for 4, 5, 6 days, you know? They just kick back, man. And the young girls who were yet to become women, they waited on them hand and foot. They had their own utensils, their own lodges. And man, they kicked back, you know? And gossip, did everything they wanted to do. And the men were left with the babies, the diapers, etc., man. We never got that four-day holiday, you know? The female-male balance. And so, to understand that, indigenous peoples worldwide began to develop their ceremonies so that the men would come into balance with the female. The female, because she is in rhythm with the universe, is capable of life itself, creating life. So we developed a purification ceremony. It's grossly misnamed, called the Sweat Lodge. It's a purification lodge. That's how we say Inipiwakan, a sacred purification lodge. You know? It's a man's ceremony so that we can become in balance with the female. It represents a womb. And you're reborn when you come out of the purification lodge. You can start again, spiritually clean. Other indigenous societies around the globe have other ceremonies to bring them in balance. And another one that the Plains Indians invoked to try to be and come into balance with the female. Zwiwangwachi, the sun dance. That is where we dance for 4 days and 4 nights without food or water. And on the fourth day, we pierce our chests or our backs with pieces of wood, and then we break it away and break the flesh. Most people think that's a very macho, brave, warrior-like thing to do. But what it is a ceremony to try to understand the burden, the pain and the suffering a woman goes through in childbirth. So that we can have some kind of balance with the female, some kind of knowledge of what it's like to be natural. We have other ceremonies that bring about many songs that talk about this, teach us this female-male balance. In indigenous cultures worldwide, you know that we have songs for everything. A song for everything. Think of anything. We have a song for it. That's why indigenous people know that if we travel anywhere in the world with the drum, we will be welcome. We will be welcomed. Philip Deere, he always counseled those of us in the movement. When you go to another country, to another people, you take a drum and you will be welcome. They will feed you. They will house you. They will protect you, those people. He always took a drum, a small little drum, when he traveled around the world. So these are some of the realities of my heritage. Another reality is our knowledge of life. Why would people pick to live in the Aleutians? I don't suppose any of you have ever been to the Aleutians. If you have, It's very windy, very wet, and very cold. And yet the Aleuts, who live on the Aleutian Islands, look upon it as paradise. I've been there. I'd never live there. I've been above the Arctic Circle, among the Inuit, Inupiat, and the Yupik, commonly referred to as Eskimos. I wouldn't live there. But it's paradise for them. I now live on the Navajo. My children and the mother of my children live there. And we are bound to follow the matrilineal line as indigenous people. And it's the high desert in the southwest. Now, I come from a people who know, like in the desert, it's a paradise. You can't die of thirst. You cannot die of hunger. It is a Garden of Eden down there, on the plains. When first viewed by the Europeans, call it a vast wasteland. Desert of grass. It's a paradise. The mountains, where the mountain people live. It's a paradise. Wherever people live, the earth, our sacred mother or grandmother, has the bounty to reward you. If you take care of your mother, if you take care of your grandmother, she will take care of you. You know, we understand the female-male balance in the universe. We understand that the suns of the universe are the male and the planets are the female. It's the planets. It's the planets that create. It's the suns and the stars that give energy. So you've been taught and told up to this very second, of course, that we're a violent people. I mean, in order to kill a people, in order to dominate a people, in order to use a people, any peoples on earth, you first have to dehumanize them. So that if you can dehumanize them, then it becomes a virtue to violate one of your commandments. Thou shalt not kill. After all, these savages aren't humans. So if we're still looking for gold in Brazil or Peru, let's just go wipe out a village or two every so often, as what happened. And it's a big international incident now, what happened in Brazil. Or what's happening to the Navajo right down the road here, forced relocation. Or what's happening to the Cree, forced relocation. Or what's happening... goes on and on. I mean, soldiers have to dehumanize the enemy. Corporate board members have to dehumanize the human race. Politicians have to dehumanize everything. And this is the society you live in. And I'm sick and tired of it. I have my life, my heritage. I know where I come from and why. I know who brought me here. I know what brought me here and why. And I know where I'm going and why. I have no confusion. I have a home. I have a home. It's not Navajo. My home is the land that makes up my skin. It's back home. It's called Ahesapa. I have a home. Every indigenous person on this earth has a home. We never. If we move because of marriage, that's not our home. That's where we live. Our home is where we're from. Our roots go deep. When we no longer have those roots, then we're like the trees you see in your parks around Boulder and around Denver and around any park where they get water so easy and they become so dependent on human supply of water that their roots just go along the top. So when the wind comes along, they blow over real easy. They stand for nothing. They stand for nothing, these trees. And I look at the urban Indians, and their roots go lateral. And I cry inside. And I look at the sacred colors of the human race, and the roots are going lateral. And I weep inside. If you can't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. And if you can't stand for your home, and if you don't understand that the home is the earth, and you're part of that home, and the home, the earth, is part of you, and you're part of that earth, that feeling doesn't come to you easily. It didn't come to me until you heard about Yellow Thunder Camp. Then I came to that understanding of I feel the Chesapa. I understand the Chesapa now. And I don't have to live there. I can live on the plains or I can live in the desert. But I know where my home is. And the home of my children. And they also are being taught that feeling. A mother of the earth, you know. But when you come from a matrilineal society, when you come from a society that when they plant corn, and yes, Plains Indians, and yes, the Lakota planted crops and agriculture. Yes, we had our corn. When you plant corn, you know you have three seeds. One for the crows, one for the earth, and one to go wherever. And the fourth one is to grow. So you plant them, and they're sacred little, don't need much irrigation. And those four little seeds there, they're talking. And they're choosing who's going to grow, you know. And then they go. And that's how we made other plants. That's how the Hopis can plant squashes and melons. And beans and corn, all plants that need a lot of water. I can plant them in the desert. I know I did it with them. Without irrigation. Without irrigation. But when you understand that, and you understand that every pine needle is a teacher. When you take your son and your daughter out to meet the ant people. And to greet the ant people. And to teach them, do not ever disturb the home of the ant people. Don't disturb the nests of the wingeds. Don't disturb the home of the matro, the bear. You don't disturb. And when you cut down a teepee pole, you have a ceremony. You give thanks. When the deer sacrifices itself so that you may have sustenance, you give thanks. You have a ceremony before and after, and you give thanks. And you don't misuse anything, you use everything. That kind of society that follows the woman, that recognizes the female-male balance, is impossible of violence. because we have the clan system. The clan system is run by the women. The female-male balance is there. It's like when we get married. The men are guests in the woman's home. And if perchance we're thrown out, it's for one of two reasons, or maybe both. We're either lousy lovers and or providers. So you get thrown out of a woman's home, ain't no one going to take a chance on you, man. You have to head out, you know. Nobody's going to take a chance on you. Then you see a lonely guy trucking around, you know, and you're from another Indian nation. You know that guy's a loser. It's a pretty tight-knit community you got there, you know. It's called responsibility. It's called freedom. Freedom simply means you are free to be responsible. And if you're responsible, you don't go around killing. If the ant people have given the respect of life, what about the human being? What about the human being? Do the Indians then dehumanize the Crow people or dehumanize the Ojibwe people and say they're dirty, rotten savages, we have to go kill them or move them to reservations or get them off their land somehow? No. Look at the treaty law and you will see in your own laws how Indians had so much respect for one another, we even had an everyman's land. The Lakota did it with our treaty making with the United States government. We created an everyman's land, except the Eurocentric male believed it to be a no man's land. That's where they came from. But every nation, here we were. And then we surrounded it with an every person's land. And then the other nation with their territory. Never any border disputes. No border disputes. Because every place between every nation was in every person's land. You know? And the clan mothers. They call me a nomad and a savage because I'm a Plains Indian. And all we did is we had winter homes and summer homes. You know? Of course, every spring we'd head for the summer home, and every fall we'd go to the winter home. Now, why are we called nomads? I mean, in the Eurocentric male society, if you have a winter home and a summer home, you're called rich. You know? How come we're not called rich? Let's play square here. But imagine, if you will, in acknowledging the female balance, and male balance, then where's the honor in killing if you understand life? In fact, if you understand life, you know that the easiest thing to do for the human being to do is to kill. That's the easiest thing. Therefore, if you're a free person and you have responsibility, you will not kill. It's easy to step on an ant. Or nowadays, to spray the cockroaches rather than clean up your place, you kill. Think about that.
You're listening to Russell Means, Knowing Who You Are, Lessons from Native America, in a special tribute program. This is Alternative Radio. You can order copies of this program by calling our toll-free number, 1-800-444-1977. That's 1-800-444-1977. Or you can order online on our website, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org.